Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John O'Grady of the club's grown-up forum and your host for today. We welcome our listening audience and invite everyone to visit online at commonwealthclub.org. It is now my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Suzanne Statler. Suzanne Statler, architect, social entrepreneur, has more than 15 years' experience in architecture and 5 years in the financial industry. Her firm specializes in the design of age-friendly and intergenerational environments and lifelong homes. She's a co-founder of the interdisciplinary forum and network At Home with Growing Old. This network seeks to promote imaginative interdisciplinary responses to the challenges of this phase of life and believes that as we spend more time at home, our home should fit us like a glove. And I personally know that Suzanne is very excited about her work in At Home with Growing Old because she gets a lot of creative ideas from the network of similarly interested professionals. Suzanne frequently speaks at conferences and academic institutions and is currently a member of the Housing Committee and the Age-Friendly and Disability-Friendly San Francisco Work Group of the Long-Term Care Coordinating Council. At Home with Growing Old, Suzanne is currently working on the Freedom House Project and is developing solutions for home environments that promote self-determination and opportunity for maximum engagement for people who need help with daily living. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to At Home with Growing Old with Suzanne Statler. Let's please welcome Suzanne.
Good afternoon and good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. At Home with Growing Old, the title is Activism for All of Us Starts in Our Own Homes. So what does this mean? There are many different types of homes and many different ways of living. We either live in long-term homes or newfound homes, but most of us want to grow old in our beloved homes. I'm going to talk today how one can make the home one loves an ally throughout life's transitions and what roles personal activism and good design play in this alliance. When I was a student of architecture in Berkeley, I had the fortune to live in the law in the in-law unit of a house in the Berkeley Hills that belonged to a staunch Berkeley liberal. Jean was in her late 70s when I moved in and she became an inspiration to me. We became a loosely affiliated household, watched out for each other, and participated in each other's lives. It was really for the first time that I lived with an older person and had conversations about what it feels to grow older. I experienced Jean in this process and started to ask, how can one's home respond, support, or allow for these changes? And what should be the qualities of a home that serves people long-term with functional beauty? This exploration led to my thesis in architecture, which was called At Home with Growing Old. That's where it all started. What I did was rather radical at this time. I designed a housing complex that was attached to a movie theater, a library, and a bowling alley with special access privilege for the residents. I believe that we should bring the world to people as an option, and people don't have to go out into the world themselves. I still believe that rather than separating housing from civic amenities, it should be attached to them. Who wouldn't like to live in the opera? This was the beginning of a mission and a passion to design homes and surroundings that support people in their life's transitions, especially in the later phases of life. Let's just think about the changes and the life transitions we go through in the 60 plus years. Many of us become empty nesters. Many of us move back in with each other. And I have talked to many people where when both are retired, it's a big, big adjustment to spend 24/7 in the home and renegotiate shared and private spaces. New households can be forming, grown children moving back in, parents moving in with children or forming intentional communities with others. Many of us who are from the baby boomer generation are used to live in shared households with some communal aspects, and this kind of things are springing up more and more. Or many of us start new careers or endeavors. That means working from home. So how can home accommodate that? And then, of course, there are physical, emotional, and cognitive changes, from knee surgery to forgetfulness. As a young architect, one thinks that architecture can fix everything. When I design it, it will be good, and it will work. It took me a while to understand that life's complexity needs an interdisciplinary approach and a more human-centered approach to life's problems, where social workers understand the power of good design and the power of a beautiful environment, and architects understand the emotional and social context of their work. That is really how the interdisciplinary forum and network At Home with Growing Old was born, which I co-founded about 6 years ago together with a social worker. It is thriving, and it has enriched my life as an architect, and I hope all the other members in the forum. If we want to engage change, and this is really what At Home with Growing Old is about, engaging change, which will happen whatever we do, but how do we engage with it? We have to turn into activists and consider our homes as long-term places of dwelling, really a resource of well-being, an enabler for our way of life. We have to ask for more and expect more. We should all want to dwell in possibility, as Emily Dickinson so beautifully said. This is Jean. She was a born activist. She was, you know, pro-Sandinista and was always a super liberal. And what she did with me, that means open her house to me, was just a natural consequence of her activism. And of course, this is a very different kind of activism, the politicized kind of activism. This was an incredibly powerful movement which very clearly demonstrated that our environments are not designed to accommodate a broad range of abilities and ages. And this was at the beginning or at the root of the ADA legislation, which was passed 25 years ago last year. And what is important to understand that this kind of activism or any kind of activism benefits us all. Who doesn't benefit from curb cuts as they roll their suitcase to the bus? And then there is, again, yet another kind of activism. When Arthur Rubinstein, the famous pianist, was asked how he was able to continue giving concerts in old age, he said the following: I play fewer pieces, I practice those fewer pieces more, and I play longer ritardandos, that means slower pieces, before the faster sections. In psychology, this is an often used example of adaptation. It's called selective optimization with compensation. And I think for all of us who love or would like to continue to do what they love to do, this is a great role model in strategy. So how can we adapt and use this different kind of activisms in our own homes so we can continue to live there as long as we would like to. Let's just think about the different roles our homes take on during our life. When we are young, a home is a nest and a playground. Then comes a time when it's a launching pad for in the teenage years. And I have a 17-year-old son, and I can tell you his room pretty much looks this way. And for him, home is not really a place where he spends much time, but it's still an important place of stability. And then comes the time when home is the family hub, the center of energy. So what is home in the later years? Can it become a resource for us? Home as resource is really an opportunity we should take advantage of. What I see and what often happens is that the comfort we have built in our homes over many, many years, and the emotional attachment to our homes sometimes becomes an obstacle in making changes. We love our homes the way they are. We don't want to make changes, even if they benefit us. But it is time to actively change if we want to live well in our home as we age. We need to turn this emotional attachment to our homes into emotional support. It's really a perfect time to be active and to take charge. The demographic shift of unprecedented proportions, which will actually continue, speaks for itself. We are not alone in our endeavors. Just think about it. 1950, 8% of the population in the States was 65 and older. In 2050, 20% will be 65 and older, a huge difference. So how can we take on, overcome this obstacle of not wanting to change the way we have lived for a long time? Maybe we can take a look at our home in a different way and think about how the notion of home can expand. What can a home really do for us? We can come at the function of home in new ways and open up possibilities to use available space or furniture in a new, more functional, and more beautiful way that is more responsive to us. I'm just thinking about the analogy of technology. Who would have thought that years ago a phone would be a texting device, we would use it for navigating, we would use it as a camera. In a similar way, let's think about how we can expand the idea, the function, the notion of home. And maybe by doing this, we can get new inspiration, new ideas, how to live in our home and how to adapt our homes. Here are some suggestions. Adaptability and flexibility. For a home to be adaptable and flexible, we don't need much square footage. This is a study I did for a 450 square foot apartment. A regular one bedroom apartment is about 550 square feet. And what I tried to do in this study was to take advantage, to make the environment multifunctional, multifaceted. A corridor, for instance, can become an exercise zone just by putting a bar on the wall and a different kind of soft floor. Visual connections can expand the space and make it more flexible. The reinterpretation of the old service hatch from the kitchen to the dining room, maybe it becomes now the service hatch from the kitchen to the bedroom. And then, of course, visual clues through color. because colors are indicators, but also give us delight. And especially, and how the rooms flow together, from curbless showers to sliding walls and doors. But you might think, why do I really have to start from scratch? I live in an existing home. I can't just reinvent my home. Why don't you think about starting small? Shift a piece of furniture, install a new faucet. I would challenge you to try that. And from a design perspective, I as an architect have the opportunity, but also the responsibility to give you choice, playroom and wiggle room to evolve in your own home. These are examples of a couple of homes and flats I designed, where it's really about openness, easy access to the outdoor, sliding doors instead of regular doors, expand and shrink a space. Or how can we build or add or remodel a home so different households can be accommodated? This is a sketch which shows an addition to a little home in Lafayette I'm currently working on, which is a three-generational household. A 25-year-old, a 60-year-old, and a 90-year-old are going to live together there. And it's planned in a way that that, you know, if this is the zone for the 90-year-old right now, this is the zone for the 60-year-old and the 25-year-old, and these are the shared zones, the living room, the kitchen, and the little den. And in the future, you know, this could become its own apartment here. So there's malleability and flexibility built in. So a home is a resource. The next way of thinking differently about rooms in your home is the bathroom. I personally think that the bathroom is the most important room in a home. What does a bathroom look like that is also a place to read, a place to read a book, that makes it easy to take care of my body in a safe way, but also leaves room for playfulness? In the old times, it was sitting in a bathtub and having a drink, or if people remember, in the old powder rooms, which I think were fabulous, a place to rest and retreat. So what could be some modern interpretations of that? No, this is not for everybody, but I would like to jog your imagination. This is a different way of looking at a shower. A shower doesn't have to be in the wall. This is a shower which is like a tree, and it's called albero, which means tree in Italian. And what I like about this is also that, you know, you can hold on to it, to the trunk of the tree. It's part of a room, and it's simple. Look at the simple way of just hanging the shower head. Another thought is out of this case study I did is that a bathroom doesn't, not everything has to be together in a bathroom, the shower, the toilet, the sink. You might think of separating it. In this case, the shower is its own room. And instead of grab bars, I actually used climbing grips. So this is a fun way to, it's about support, really, to think about what is needed. Support is needed, and safety is needed. And if you think about aging as an extreme sport, then suddenly, which I think it is, then you get new ideas about what you can use. Because the world of sport sports is full of gears, which are designed for climbing a half dome, for sailing over the ocean, etc. So there's certainly inspirations here. And then this bathroom, as a living room, is by, again, a Swiss design company. I pronounce it Heavy. And it's especially designed for people with forgetfulness or dementia. And if you look closely, you know, the color contrasts mark clearly what the functions of individual items are. And it's a beautiful light-filled but also playful room. It works really for everybody. Oops. Let me see. I don't know. I pushed a button now, and now you have a smaller slide. Is somebody from the AV department here? Do you know? Anyway, we'll continue with the smaller slide, and for now, I'm not quite sure how to fix this. But the other room which needs rethinking and expansion is the kitchen. What if we think about the kitchen as a health center? Not just a place to cook and prepare food, but a center which supports our health. Often, you know, later in life, we don't cook meals for the large family. And eating becomes a more focused activity. And at times, the delight in food might not be there. And many of us certainly also take their medicine in the kitchen and with the food. So how can a kitchen design respond to these different functions we assign to it? This is a kitchen by an Italian kitchen designer. And again, this is for inspiration. And what the wonderful thing is about this kitchen is that it's like a work area. It's like a workspace, very, very compactly designed. The sink is here, the stove is here, the fridge is here. It's all open underneath with these turntables here for easy access. And on top of it, it's just beautiful. And everything is in arm's length. And then there's this kitchen, which was actually designed by a non-designer, by John Huckenberry, who leads, I think, the Takeaway at National Public Radio. And he's in a wheelchair, and he designed this kitchen for him. And again, the elements of the kitchen: modular designs, easy accessible, and flexible. And then there are two older examples, because I wanted to show you that we all have elements in what we already have which serve us well. On the left-hand side is the so-called Frankfurt kitchen that came out of an experiment but a design endeavor in Germany, I believe in the 30s. And it was the first built-in kitchen, and it was designed to make a woman's life easier. And it was very, very well thought through, where the storage was, how you could, you know, take the spices out, etc. On the right-hand side, and I think the concept is a similar one. Again, it's about serving somebody who uses the kitchen to support their health. And then on the right-hand side, there is a kitchen in one of the Maybach houses in Berkeley. And again, one wouldn't design the kitchen this way anymore. the drawers would be difficult to move out and the cabinet doors might stick. But look at the beautiful windows and the little playful openings to the outside. Playfulness is part of the Kitchener's health center, but also the open shelves, which make it easy to have access to whatever we use daily. It's definitely an inspiration. The other component in rethinking what our home can do for us is fitness. We all know that exercise and good nutrition are really the only two factors which are proven to increase the lifespan, and not only to increase the lifespan, but to increase the healthy lifespan. So how can we make it easy for us to exercise in our own homes? Let's think about a stair as an exercise tool, a safe and beautiful stair. And this is not, you know, a new invention. On the left-hand side is a stair in LA, and you see it everywhere. Also here in the Bay Area, people use stairs as exercise machines. So let's use our own stair as an exercise machine. Or what about, again, in here in the apartment I developed, the exercise zone in the corridor, which I showed before. It doesn't take much to do that. And then a little provocative, active furniture. Furniture is exercise machines. This is a beautiful piece, which again is not for everybody, but I think it's a great inspiration to think about furniture not just in different ways, not just for sitting, but using it to work out. So how do I design furniture which should be a sculpture and is also for workout? That's a great example. And then we all have too many things. I probably shouldn't speak for everybody, but many of us have too many things. And I see this in my work, that the things we have become a weight for many people. They become something like a huge mountain they can't overcome. And the way to look at this big mountain is to think about curating the things you possess, having a changing exhibit in your own home. This is a way Frank Lloyd Wright, in one of his interiors, suggested to do this, with these wall shelves where paintings were just leaned against the wall. Easy to change. The old glass cabinet comes in different ways. On the right-hand side, an old piece from Vienna. On the left-hand side, a very modern piece from Italy, and then below, IKEA. Many ways to do it. And then one example from a project of mine, the entry area of a house where the coat storage becomes fun and interesting. And instead of regular pulls or knobs, you have finger holes, which are easy to grip. Reducing obstacles is something we should think about. And reducing obstacles while having fun, I would say. So, and I'm sorry that this is cut off here, but smart products and materials or material intelligence. We are so used to the standard product. We have seen grab bars 10 million times, and we have formed an opinion on grab bars. They're ugly, and we're never going to use them. So here, this is an example where somebody actually has thought about this like an industrial designer. And the grab bar is becoming like a functional tool or a functional or a beautiful fastener. It's something which is designed with integrity. And on the right-hand side, a lever handle, which replaces the knob. And many of us have used their elbows with their hands full with bags to open the door with a lever handle. You could never do this with a knob. And of course, for people with arthritis, it's the way to go. But in Europe, this is total standard. That's what I grew up with anyway. So there's nothing, no special image attached to it. And then another version of a grab bar. And again, it's about intelligence, smart products that really serve their purpose, that don't pretend to be what they are not. I personally don't like decorative grab bars because they pretend to be something else. This doesn't pretend to be something else. It's true to itself, and therefore it's beautiful. And then, let me see. Where do I do this? Oops. Yay! Thank you. It's not my computer, so it's and it's an Apple and not PC, sorry. So, you know, again, this rethinking of things we have been used to for a long time. Why not make the faucet bendable instead of a swivel? And a great other way to look at shower heads. Here they're made of an anti-allergy silicone rubber, which is soft to the touch. So if you hit your elbow against it, it doesn't hurt. And then, of course, we have, you know, famous proponents of ergonomic and healthy products. This is the famous architect Michael Graves, who passed away, I think, last year or the year before. And due to his own impairments and illness, he started to get interested. He was frustrated with the level of design which was represented in the products he used, and he started his own line and contributed a lot to expanding the notion of the kind of products he designed. And I want to come back to Arthur Rubinstein, our inspiration from the very beginning. Selective optimization with compensation, he practiced this on the piano. We can also practice this when getting up and sitting down in a chair. It's the famous nose over toes way of getting out easier from a chair. And it's just an example that it's not just about improving how our homes can serve us, but also rethinking how we can use our bodies better. So activism starts in our own home. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be 100%. But every step helps and it benefits us. And I want to read this little statement. It's a statement one of my clients made. I'm aging at home. I'm 68 years old and recently retired. I love my home and my neighborhood. I can walk or take a bus for shopping, and I have friends nearby. Before I retired, I remodeled my bathroom so it's totally accessible and at the same time very stylish. No one sees how accessible it is until I point it out. I also expanded the deck outside my kitchen door and eliminated a step down. I built a vegetable planter that is high enough so I don't have to bend to work with the plants. She made certain moves. She didn't make all the moves, but she made certain moves. And that's the way to start. So I encourage you all to start somewhere. Thank you very much. So you have to ask questions now. Yes.
We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to At Home with Growing Old with Suzanne Statler. Our thanks to Suzanne for her comments today. I'm John O'Grady with the club's Grown-Ups Forum, and I'll be moderating today's question period. Suzanne, I'm sure we'll have many questions, so why don't we begin? First question.
Thank you. When you say a shower would be accessible, is there any way to do a bathtub that you would consider accessible? For example, would you use a higher profile or?
I mean, accessible really means that you can roll in with a wheelchair and
right.
You can't roll in with a wheelchair, but what you can do is, you can make it safer. You can make it safer through safety bars and sort of think how you get in and out of the bathroom, adjust your body. And I would, if somebody is really impaired, I would work with an occupational therapist to figure this out. And of course, there's always then, something called a transfer seat, which is not very beautiful, but, Michael Graves, I think, did a better one, but where you somebody can slide you into the bathtub, mm-hmm. Sitting. You will never, go down into the bathtub.
Thank you.
Sure. You talk about stairs as a means for fitness.
Yes.
And conventional wisdom has always been as you get older, you want a place that doesn't have stairs. And so I'm wondering what material those stairs should be to ensure that one doesn't slip and fall.
Well, I think, to be precise, is I think you should have options. And I wouldn't do, a stair is an exercise tool, but you also should have a way to live on the first floor if you do have a stair. Mm-hmm. So you give yourself the opportunities to live, on one level. And what the stair should have in terms of not slipping, I think that a wood stair is better than a carpeted stair because you can see the edge of the tread better. It's not like rounded like with the carpet. And I also think that you see this all over in public spaces. There's sort of a, off my warning stripe or a contrasting color at the edge of the tread, which helps you to visually recognize when the new step starts, because that's often a reason for slipping. Mm-hmm. And then I would also say handrails on either side, on both sides.
Thank you.
Sure.
Susie, Could you talk a little bit about how you assess when you, I believe you have sort of a team that goes in, and I think that's really fascinating if you can talk about how you help people assess what they might need for their homes.
Yeah, we started at home with Growing Old and a project, a service called Aging Gracefully at Home. And we are a team of an architect, an industrial designer, a social worker, and a psychologist. And we do a visual walkthrough with somebody through their home. And then we have a long discussion with them about how they live in their home, how they perceive their home, but not only about their home, but you know, about their lifestyles, about their health, etc. And what we have seen over these last 2 years when we started this is that what really is a great asset for people, that they are able to have a focused discussion about their decision and about their aging process. Somebody is taking them seriously and is addressing it, you know, as a kind of work which has to be done. And we have also seen from people we have worked with that they would like us to check in with them like once every half year and see how they're doing. Because we are giving them recommendations, we are giving them a report which talks about the options they have based on our assessment and observations. And it can become a to-do list for them. And it's not, of course, obligatory, but these are suggestions and recommendations. And I think it really helps to focus the process, and it really helps to address this just as another phase of life. It's not a phase where we get, it's not about weakness, it's not about not being able to do something anymore. It's about working with what you have.
Suzanne, why would I want an industrial designer in my home?
You have seen all the different products and materials I showed. And there is a wealth of different products out there that help people to compensate or support them. I mean, I'm just like the simple example of, you know, like an automatic can opener or something like this. Because for a lot of people, this becomes very difficult to open cans or jar opener. And an industrial designer can assess what you really need and also can recommend the right product for you. It's not necessary to reinvent the wheel all the time. There is a lot out there already, but it's very difficult to find the right product, and that's what our industrial designer does. And also what she also does is she really understands the relationship. Every good industrial designer should do this. The relationship between the body and the object. You know, how do we interact with our environment? And she helps us a lot in understanding that.
I'm sure there are a lot of technological advances that could fit into your design somehow, but I don't know how. Could you say, or am I wrong? Maybe you could say something about that.
Well, it sort of depends what you understand by technology. If it's digital technology or just the regular good old technology, I think, you know, there's a lot of good technology out there. Mechanical things which can help. On the other hand, I still feel that, you know, when I talked about the gadget and gears, which we have, the extreme sports, disciplines have. I still think we have a long way to go to get the kind of technology which is really functional and supportive. And in terms of digital technology, we all know there's a myriad of products out there. Every day more of them come out. Many of them have to do with sensors and keeping in touch, which definitely is very important. Many people are isolated in this stage of life, and this is a real health risk. So staying, whatever helps us to stay connected, is very important. But I also feel that there is sometimes a gap between the people who develop these products and their understanding who they are designing for. My biggest deal is, or criticism would be, that many of these products are too complicated. I am totally on the simplicity track, or one functional. I just recently got a one CD player for myself, where I just have to pull a cord to play a CD. So that's sort of the kind of beautiful and intuitive simplicity, which I think many, a lot of the digital technology is lacking.
Susie, when we bought our house, my husband said he wanted flat in and flat out so we could wheel our wheelchairs in at some point. But as you were talking about the bathroom, I was thinking, what if we were in a wheelchair? Does the standard doorway in a 1955 house, does it allow for a wheelchair to go through? And if not, is that a huge remodel that's required to enlarge a doorway?
You know, it's not... Most houses probably don't. I mean, you need a minimum of 32 inches clear for the standard wheelchair to pass. And if you don't want to scrape your knuckles, it would be nice to have a little more. And you can gain, you know, if this is really an issue, you can gain some space by taking the door off, because the, you know, the door thickness takes up some space. And I sometimes... And it really is not that much work to I mean, you have to reframe the door and hang a new door, etc. But why not? You know, it's totally worth it. And what I also like to do often, if privacy is not such an issue, is to use pocket doors, which are a bigger undertaking because you have to take up out the bigger section of the wall. But it's wonderful because they just, you know, disappear into the wall. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, some of the base standards is a certain door width, and every new house should pay attention to that.
And then Susie, I also wondered, is there one primary thing that happens or that prevents a person as they age from staying in their home?
I don't know if there's a primary thing. I think, you know, for all of us, it's really, as I said in the beginning, we should allow ourselves to dwell in possibility. And the more we think ahead and allow for opportunities to evolve, the better. I think, you know, San Francisco is a very difficult place to grow old in your own home just because of the topography and the houses are constructed. My vision was always that, you know, people would open up their backyards to each other and there would be one elevator in the backyard with a big bridge which then connects all the back porches. But it is, you know, it's definitely an issue, and I think you know, there should be more creative ways of thinking, you know, from house swapping, that, you know, people who who don't want to live in the suburb anymore in their big house, but live in a good school district, swap with somebody in the city who gives them an apartment with elevator and access in zero step entries. I think this kind of, you know, swaps, why not? You know, we could think about this swap housing stock with each other depending on what the needs are.
I thought you said something about the sliding door was preferable to it in an outdoor, but I'm not sure if I heard you correctly or what the advantages are.
You mean outdoor, you said?
To go the kind of door that
Oh, the swinging door.
Right.
Well, it's just because the sliding door, you know, slides all the way into the wall. Mm-hmm. And with a swinging door, you have the thickness of the door.
Right.
But also, you know, that it gives you a little bit more fluidity in the way rooms are used. Okay. You know, very often swing-in doors take up, you know, the swing of the doors, mm-hmm. Take up rooms, a room. And, you know, very often when people live in by themselves in one-bedroom apartments, doors really don't get closed or very rarely. So I never understand why everybody still clings to swinging doors instead of pocket doors, because or even what I also showed was this, you know, barn door-like bigger doors, which then enlarge a door opening and can combine two rooms. Like in the old days, there are many, you know, old San Francisco apartments where you have these big, big pocket doors between rooms, and this was very allowed really for a flexibility to live in an apartment. So a good example of, you know, how we can learn from things which are already here, but we sort of have been forgotten, or we don't really understand anymore what the advantage of them is.
Could you say a little bit more about At Home with Growing Old organization?
Of course. Thank you for this question. Before I start, so I don't forget, because I'm getting pretty forgetful too, there are cards on the table on the left-hand side of the door which talk a little bit about this group. We are really a group of interdisciplinary professionals, thinkers, activists who have started an inquiry into aging together and are seeking to improve the aging experience through collaboration and through knowing and understanding better how each of us can contribute. I always see that, you know, disciplines, and we all know this, talk in their own language, and it really helps to share language, especially you know, in when complex problems need solving. And I think, you know, growing old is a pretty complex problem, and this should be acknowledged. We have monthly forums. One is just coming up this Thursday in Berkeley. We alternate between Berkeley and San Francisco. We have people from, you know, as I said, all different disciplines who give presentation, and we have fantastic discussions afterwards. This Thursday is about sleeping well and living well, and by somebody from the Sleep Lab at UC Berkeley, who will be talking about the influence on sleep, also on cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's. And then we have somebody later on in the year who will talk about social justice and aging. So we have really a wide variety of topics, and we invite all of you to check out our website.
What's the website address?
www.athomewithgrowingold.com. I know it's a mouthful, but it really sort of talks about, you know, at home with growing old, both in the physical but also in the emotional way of growing older.
And what's the best way for people to reach you, Suzanne?
The best way to reach me is to go on my website, www.stadlerarch.com, or you can also reach me through At Home with Growing Old.
Great. We have time for one more question. One last question. Valerie?
You remember, thank you. Hi, sorry I was a little late, so I only caught the ending, but I just love the concept of the multi-generational family there that you were talking about, and we do have a lot of families that we work with, because we work mainly with patients that have dementia and want to stay at home, right, in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Right.
And so I'm seeing a lot of, the stairway issues, and there's not a lot of homes that are necessarily flat like that, that just one level. And do you work a lot with helping with this, the chair, those lifts that can go up to, and retrofitting homes for the wheelchairs and things when they're
wanting? I have never put in such a lift.
Okay.
But, there are certain requirements in terms of stair widths and stair run for mm-hmm. that. And I would, again, talk to an occupational therapist before mm-hmm. I put something like this in.
Well, and we see a lot of opportunity with working with you, with the families we do work with yeah. their homes, that we're adding a lot of things in the showers with bars and things, and I can see how yes. this would be really beneficial, too.
Yes.
That's great.
What organizations are you from?
Oh, it's Tender Rose Home Care. So it's just yes. dementia, but we can
No,
talk,
and I think you are right at the, uh-huh. you're the ones who know the homes.
Yes.
So I think it's a great yes. expansion of your services.
Great, we can talk after, yeah. but that's wonderful. Yeah. So, okay, thanks.
Our thanks to Suzanne Stadler, architect, co-founder of At Home with Growing Old, for her comments here tonight. We also thank our audience, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 113th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. I'm supposed to do the gavels now. Thank you.
Thank you.